verses that we're going to cover today, very exciting, ecstatic preaching verses.
And the verses that precede this morning's verses, in other words, what we discussed last night, it's a very appropriate and natural prelude to what Pilate is going to be saying this morning or next. So I want to review the discussion, basically the discussion that we had last night. And the points of Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, the points of Pilate's recognition of the Lord's presence everywhere. Although he remains and holds himself transcendental and independent from all things, he simultaneously manifests his presence everywhere, although not readily discernible, certainly not to those who are in a contaminated state. I was thinking one way to begin this discussion is mentioned in the purport a couple of times, those previous purports, the Vedic aphorism, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. So, does anybody know, anyone heard that before? Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. It's right in Bhagavad Gita, in a purport, where there are several Vedic statements, and Prabhupada explains it in Bhagavad Gita, how to understand these things. That's what he's explaining here also, through his commentary. And Pilate is making the statements, Prabhupada is explaining it. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, what does that mean? First, what's a literal translation? Simple. Everything is Brahma. Sarvam Kalv Idam Brahma. Kalv means indeed, so it's strong. Sarvam Kalv Idam Brahma. Everything. Sarvam. Indeed. Emphatically. Is Brahman. So that's the statement of oneness. The statement of oneness has this not so readily discernible factor of the differentiation between the state of oneness of all things and the variegatedness within that oneness. Of course, we like variegatedness. Prabhupada has said, variety is the mother of enjoyment. Imagine if the only thing that you had to eat was one thing. Khichdi with no salt. Maybe even that's even with variety, that's different vegetables. And dal, and rice, and spices. Maybe a little ghee, but no salt. And that's all you ate. That's all there was to eat. You didn't even have a choice to think about eating any other thing but that one thing. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. And why is it that the living entities want enjoyment? One might argue, that's just illusion. But we find than all living entities in this material condition, as well as in the spiritual condition, there's this inclination for enjoyment. We all want to be happy. Why is that? Because fundamentally, that's our condition. Because we're part and parcel of the Supreme Enjoyer. So we also want natural. Fundamentally, we want enjoyment. And the logical extension of that is that therefore there's variety not only in this material world but in the spiritual world. Even in the realm of Brahman, where everything is Brahman, there's also variety. So Prahlad is indicating that through his explanations here. He's doing it through the agency. He's inferring through what one can materially experience the existence of the Supreme, and inferring in turn variegatedness of the Supreme. So who can walk us through that explanation? Can someone volunteer? This 2-minute little summary here. How does Prahlad introduce that? He's speaking about the creation. I don't see anybody's hands up here. Anybody want to volunteer? I see one hand up in here. Really, you missed it. Why don't you offer an explanation? You were out there yesterday. Oh. That's a good explanation. Go ahead.
Prahlad says that everything is actually Krishna because everything is a manifestation. And any thought of your mind is an illusion because everything is related to the emanation.
And because we discussed this, there was in our questions and answers, there was something about aromas and the earth, and what was that all about? Explain.
It just says there is already fragrance or aroma present in the earth, but you can't feel it. But when there is a proper presence of the tree or seed, then immediately that aroma is extracted by mystical potencies. Similarly, as the Lord is present in everything, although we can't actually perceive it.
Mm. So it's one of those, as this is to this, as A is to B, so B is to C. It goes like that. So the correspondence is, he said, I'm just repeating, not anything different. There's, in a very, very subtle way, there's fragrances and colors. Because so subtle that we cannot detect the Parijata fragrance or the gardenia fragrance or the lotus fragrance in the earth, the champak fragrance. We don't smell it. But by the arrangements of the Supreme Lord, through the proper medium of manifesting, that fragrance is made perceivable to us. So, like that subtle, not perceivable prior existence manifesting its result or consequent manifestation, so similarly, the Supreme Lord is present everywhere. From He who is all pervasive and present everywhere, subtle existences come into being from which grosser existences come into being, but He is the source of those subtler existences and in turn the grosser existences, although we may not be able to perceive Him. And specifically, statements are made to explain this, that this material cosmic manifestation, it's made up, it's comprised of these two prakritis, the Bina Prakritir Ashtada and the eight separated material energies and the soul, both of which, both prakritis, are manifestations of Purusha. And so Purusha is manifest in the cosmic manifestation in the form of his various energies. He's all pervasive. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is but Brahman. Now, Vyasadeva, through the agency of Bhagavatam, is teaching that presence is manifest through transformation. Vivarta. Excuse me. Parinamavad. Through the transformation, Shakti. Parinamavad, one of the teachings of the Sampradayas is Brahma, Parinamavad. Brahman transforms. But more literally, Brahman consists also of innumerable Shaktis, and it's specifically the Shaktis that transform. They transform. Just like the subtle scent of a flower is transformed into a perceivable scent of that flower by the Lord's arrangement, manifesting that scent through the agency of the tree or plant. So, not understanding these things leads to a variety of bewilderments. One very common variety is materialism. Not seeing the source of emanation, just like if you see a 100 rupee note, a 500 rupee note. They have any bigger rupee notes than 500? Huh? 1,000 rupee note. Okay. You're on your way to your class, and you see lying on the street, on the sidewalk, a 1,000 rupee note. Because it doesn't have a proprietor, right? It's just lying there, discarded. What are you going to do, put it up on a bulletin board and say, whoever lost this 1,000 rupee note, please claim it. Just take it. There'll be 10 people lined up to claim it. You get the idea. So if materialism is blind or is ignoring, either deliberately ignoring or just because one is covered, ignoring, in ignorance, one is not acknowledging the source of this. So it's up for grabs. It's mine. Or whatever little piece of it I can grab a hold of, that's mine. Materialism, that's, anyway, there's so many different isms are built upon proprietorship. In Ishopanishad, this is the primary topic of Ishopanishad, proprietorship. Who owns things? Things are owned according to the Vedic conception. Ownership is based on source of emanation, not who grabbed it first. Or who grabbed it most recently. Like Prabhupada describes, persons came to America from Europe, the Red Indians, they were there, and they just pushed them out of the way. And it's mine. They killed them, or they just, you know, they bullied them, or whatever they did. They pushed them out of the way. It's a very sad history there's many tales of sadness and on all of that history that aren't in the history books, but anyway, won't get into all the sadness of America's history, but so then it became the property of the Europeans. And then they start their own country and, you know, get out. French get out, English get out, it's ours. And it's a sense of proprietorship, and we have a certain doctrine to maintain how it's ours. Anyway, materialism. And then there's this other idea that doesn't belong to anybody. Okay. Communism is there, belongs to the state. Impersonalism, it doesn't belong to anybody. And the Vaishnava conception is it belongs to God. All of them are illusory conceptions without, due to the absence of understanding of actual proprietorship. So Prahlad is describing the relationship, sambandha, the relationship between the cosmic manifestation and the Supreme Lord. He's also describing the relationship of the Supreme Lord with various forms of the Supreme Lord, all of whom are transcendental. All of the forms of the Lord, they're totally transcendental. They may remain in the Vaikuntha realm, they may make some manifestation in this material realm and manifest appropriate features or forms corresponding to the lila to be enacted, but they're all fully transcendental. And then he gives a very important reason why those forms of the Lord appear. They appear to protect those souls who are very sincere in wanting to maintain their conscious connection with that transcendental Supreme Lord. So he gives the example of Hayagriva to protect the Vedas from Madhu and Kaitava, who wanted to kidnap them and bring them into their own mischievous purposes. What's a demon going to do with the Vedas anyways? Somehow they'll figure some horrible thing to do with, just like I just received an email from somebody. I don't know how I got it. There's some bulletin board Bhagavad Gita question thing that somebody has done. So somebody asked, I heard that Robert Oppenheimer, he read Bhagavad Gita, and when the atomic bomb exploded, he quoted the verse from Bhagavad Gita. Time I am, Kalosmi. Where is that in Bhagavad Gita? What's all this about? So, apparently he read Bhagavad Gita in the course of building the atomic bomb. Just heard Prabhupada commenting, so many personalities have read, not just Hindus read Bhagavad Gita, or religionists read Bhagavad Gita. Albert Einstein regularly read Bhagavad Gita. Robert Oppenheimer regularly read Bhagavad Gita. Martin Luther King, I don't know if that name means anything to you here, a big civil rights exponent and who became inspired by Gandhi in America, black civil rights leader. He regularly read Bhagavad Gita. So many personalities have become inspired by the message of Bhagavad Gita. Whether or not they've understood the personality behind the Bhagavad Gita, it's another thing. But Prahlad is understanding it, and by our reading very carefully from the Bhagavatam, we can also come to understand the personality of Godhead behind the scriptural message. Who he's always interested to, he is always interested to protect the Vedas and those souls who take shelter of him. So that's the prelude to what we're going to hear this morning. This is a conception of the Supreme Lord's presence everywhere. This is a very advanced stage of spiritual realization. He's giving credit to Brahma for realizing it. But obviously he realizes it even more deeply than Brahma. Because Brahma is afraid of Lord Nrisimhadeva, and Prahlad has no fear of Lord Nrisimhadeva because he understands his very compassionate nature. That fierce side of Lord Nrisimhadeva is meant for those who are not devotees. And the benedicting, protecting side is meant for the devotee. So he then starts a whole, we're going to cover, I think we're going to cover it all because it's a theme. The next theme that follows is the mood shifts. So Prahlad has been describing creation. And Sambandha Gyan, the relationship of the cosmos with the Creator. And now this form of the Lord in various forms and how he manifests in a merciful state. So now he's invoking that mercy. And in invoking the mercy, he does the same thing. He starts in the same place that he started when his prayers originally began. He speaks from a position of complete humility. In order to surrender, one has to be in a humble state of mind. Putting on an affectation of humility, that's not going to bring about surrender. We've all seen that, and it's transparently not so. If someone is just speaking something and pretending something, but their heart is not humble, doesn't resonate the same way. Someone who's genuinely humble. So Prahlad is speaking here in a very, very humble way about his own misfortune and lack of qualification. Starting on text 39. Prahlad says, "My dear Lord of the Vaikuntha planets," so he's being specific, "although you're here before me in this material world, I know that your real place is the Lord of Vaikuntha. You come here mercifully only. O Lord of the Vaikuntha planets, where there is no anxiety." Now he's going to make a confession. "My mind is extremely sinful and lusty, being sometimes so-called happy and sometimes so-called distressed. I'm in duality. You're beyond duality, and I'm in duality. My mind is full of lamentation and fear, and it always seeks more and more money." He's just a little boy, but he's speaking in this way. "Thus it has become most polluted and is never satisfied in topics concerning you." So this is the state. When one's mind is polluted, one can be in the most beneficial of circumstances, but the polluted mind, contaminated mind, conditioned mind, agitates. And in that agitated state, even the most beneficial thing, one can't even recognize it, one isn't satisfied by it, one is always disturbed. So he's saying, that's my condition. It's not his condition. Krishna is a pure devotee. He's a Mahajan, not just, he's a, the best amongst pure devotees. But he's feeling, this is an important point. When very, very exalted souls speak in this way, this is what they're feeling. They're not putting on an air. They're not, because it's conventionally a nice thing to say, they say it in a conventional way. They're actually feeling. Many examples of this, in particularly in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the most exalted servants of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were so humble. I relish this part of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Rupa Goswami, who understood the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without Mahaprabhu telling him, he could understand his feelings, his transcendental ecstasies. Not only he could understand it, but he could compose Sanskrit verses that would directly complement and magnify that mood. He was such a personality, completely tuned in and with complete scholarship to complement that understanding. And yet Rupa Goswami was so humble that he, like Haridas Thakur, he would not even sit in the assembly with the other devotees. Not because that'll be a nice way to show my humility. It was because he was feeling, I'm unqualified to be with these other personalities. There's a nice narration in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya was told, of course he's omniscient, so he already knew, but he was told that Rupa Goswami has composed a drama. Now, what's a Vaishnava writing play scripts for? Seems like, you know, that's something you do over in Bombay, maybe, but anyway, he had composed a nice drama. And it was a drama in two parts. So Lord Chaitanya, one day, he came with Sarup Damodar, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and the whole assembly of all the devotees who were there in Puri, associates, the leading Vaishnavas. And he came right to the place where Rupa Goswami was residing and requested Rupa Goswami, please recite. Rupa Goswami not only didn't want to recite, but he was sitting off at a distance. And the devotees were encouraging, come sit with us. I can't come and sit with you. I can't do that. Well, at least recite. He was silent. He couldn't speak. Finally, after much inducement in Mahaprabhu directly, through urging him to do so, recite the introductory verse. So he spoke one verse that was glorifying the holy name of Krishna. What nectar the syllables Krishna have as they decorate my tongue. I'm experiencing such ecstasy and Krishna is personally dancing there and I don't know the whole shloka. So when everyone heard the poetry of Rupa Goswami, they were, waves of happiness filled them. And on, verse after verse, and the devotees were analyzing the shlokas of Rupa Goswami's drama. And Srup Damodar said, this is not a poem. This is waves of nectar meant to increase the ecstasy of love of Godhead, washing over all the souls who hear it. This isn't just a poem. But he was abject humility, Rupa Goswami. Even Lord Chaitanya was praising his handwriting. He said it's like strings of pearls. Anyway, many nice examples of it's a natural position. or and there isn't time. I could, maybe I'll narrate something this evening when we have at 7:30. Many persons have to get up and go. Is that right? There's class today, and okay, so I'll try to not tell stories and just nice story tonight. So Prahlad begins with humility. My mind is polluted. I'm always disturbed. I'm always experiencing duality. I have no taste for your topics. If we don't have taste for chanting, it has nothing to do with chanting. It has to do with our consciousness. Mixed with duality, or immersed in duality. I am therefore most fallen and poor in such a status of life. How shall I be able to discuss your topics, or topics of your activities? My Lord, O infallible one, my position is like that of a person, and he gives a metaphor, a person who has many wives, all of whom are trying to attract him in their own way. So there's a painting our artists have drawn of someone who's sitting there in a chair, and there are five senses represented by different wives, each with a rope dragging, pulling his attention, pulling the tongue, pulling the eye, pulling the nose, pulling the ear. Demanding satisfaction. So he's saying, I'm like a henpecked husband with so many wives, all of whom are demanding attention. There's no way to satisfy all these demands. So I'm busy all the time trying to fulfill the demands of these multiple personalities. And it's impossible. We give specific examples of how that's. The sense of smell is attracted to yet another side. The restless eyes are attracted to the scenes of sense gratification. And the active senses are attracted elsewhere. In this way, I am certainly embarrassed. So he's speaking a point of, from a position of humility, but he's also elucidating what is the material condition of life. One who is anatta, one who is without any shelter. Remember, two times ago when visiting here, that term came up in Prahlad's teaching, and I was reminded of these street dogs that hang out here. They have no master, and so if they get a little scrap of food here and there, they're lucky. Somebody comes along and kicks them, and they have nothing. They have life, and they have to live their life till its end, but there's no shelter. There's no affection, there's no, nothing. So that's the material condition of life, but one doesn't have such shelter, and the position of a devotee is a devotee has shelter. Have a master. And in that shelter of the master, I just gave the example. I was watching the, I'll repeat it for those of you that were not here a couple times ago. There's a man that goes, I don't know if he's still doing it, probably still does it, every morning goes for a walk with his dog. He's got a leash on the dog. Still there? Then there was a whole bunch of those dogs that would hang out until the dog catchers came and took him away. And you know how dogs are. They would all stand up and growl. This is our territory. What are you doing here? So the man with the dog on his leash took the dog under his arm In the other hand, he had a stick. So I watched the dogs. They looked at each other. The dog passed. They went back to their sitting place and sat down. But had he not had a master with a stick, that dog might have, you know, had lost some fur or something. At least been, you know, had to go through that whole thing with their bristling their back and showing their teeth and and then running. Anyway. So, and the same thing, the same doggish mentality. Prabhupada described how that's how it is when you go through customs and immigration. Ah, wow. What are you doing here? I've not come to harm anybody. I'm coming, Prabhupada speaking. I'm coming just to give something to everybody. How long will you stay? Less than a month. All right. So people keep a dog by outside their gate, and they post a sign, "Beware." But sometimes there are those little ones that they couldn't harm anything, but they make a lot of noise. People that keep those dogs, I don't know how they get sleep because those dogs are... what follows naturally, and you're already explained, you're all pervasive. This whole thing is under your direction. It's but a manifestation of your energy. And mercifully you've appeared. Therefore, mercifully, please pick me up out of this condition. But very, very important is in Prahlad's statements, and Prabhupada really amplifies Prahlad's mood. He's saying, not just pick me up, but he's saying, all of us who are in this condition, please pick us up.
Text 41. My Lord.
You're always transcendentally situated on the other side of the river of death. But because of the reactions of our own activities, we are suffering on this side. Indeed, we have fallen into this river and are repeatedly suffering the pains of birth and death and eating horrible things. Thou kindly look upon us. Not only me, but also all others who are suffering. And by your causeless mercy and compassion, deliver us and maintain us. Now, Prahlad has already explained that he's not afraid of the Supreme Lord. This is something we can review point for this evening. We can say it again, but what is it that he's afraid of? He's afraid of material existence. An exalted Vaishnava has lots of respect for the very, very precarious condition of this material existence. Not casual or cavalier or flirtatious about material existence. One's very, very careful. Material existence. Deep respect for how the razor sharp cutting of suffering that material existence can bring to the living entity. Prabhupada writes in this purport, a Vaishnava is always afraid of such abominable life. So he's gone through and described how unrestricted sense activity in the material world produces such suffering. A Vaishnava is very much afraid of that. And so what does a Vaishnava do? A Vaishnava takes shelter of devotional service. Not just out of fear, but out of recognizing that's the right position to be in. In turn, the Lord is compassionate to
those souls.
And therefore he appears for their benefit. He quotes the verse, which we all know, yada yada hi dharmasya glaniya bhavati bharata bhutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. The Lord is always ready to help the fallen souls. But because they are fools and rascals, they do not take the Krishna consciousness and abide by the instruction of Krishna. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is personally the Supreme Lord Krishna, yet he comes as a devotee to preach the Krishna consciousness movement. Yare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. One must therefore become a sincere servant of Krishna. This is like it's a mandate. It's taking the understanding that Prahlad, the philosophical things that Prahlad has explained, and then consolidating them in a very personal mandate. We should take shelter of the Supreme Lord and take his very, very, very merciful message, which he delivers when he appears, and make that message manifest. By making that message manifest, he's becoming manifest. It's as good as the Lord's being manifest and speaking it himself. And he may choose to speak it himself. But otherwise, as he did with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a devotee. But otherwise, Mahaprabhu's mandate is, you should do this, or we should do this. We should become very sincere in this as a mandate. Wherever you go, speak something about Krishna. Remember this other example that Prahlad... No, this is something else. Rishabhdev, in his instructions to his sons, after same thing, describing in detail about the perils of material existence, he then instructs his sons, you have to teach this. You have to live by it, and you have to teach it to others, because if you don't teach it to others, what is that? You see somebody headed for a ditch, or a blind person heading off the edge of a cliff, and just let them go. In fact, encourage them. Very nice. Keep going. There's the business of pursuit of materialism, hell-bent on, just like these things that Prahlad is saying, being pulled this way and that by happiness and distress, by attraction for sense gratification, by being consumed by the desire to have more and more wealth. It blinds the soul to his real purpose of life. Who the real proprietor of all things is, our relationship with that proprietor, our loving position, the position of real happiness. It's being robbed. We see somebody come along and rob another person. Don't say anything. Halt, thief! Isn't it? You're in a train, you see somebody, you know, is nodding out, and some thief comes along and is stealing from their belongings. Just look the other way. I don't see it. Stop, you're a thief. Conductor, immediately, arrest this man. How can you not? So, if we just speak, the mandate here is speak the message that Krishna speaks when he comes to prithranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma sangstapanartha. This is the mandate here. One must take this very seriously. Amara agyai guruhana tara edesh. One should become a guru and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. simply by preaching the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Just read one more. 22 minutes after 7, but this mood continues for several verses, actually, where Prahlad is at his best. He's praying to Lord Nisringadev to be compassionate. Lord Nisringadev is compassionate. Before he was killing the demons, and now it's protect the devotees. Prahlad is invoking that mood. Please protect your devotee and protect all of these souls from their very pitiable condition of material existence, just like me. Oh, my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, original spiritual master of the entire world, what is the difficulty for you who manage the affairs of the universe in delivering the fallen souls engaged in your service? You are a friend of all suffering humanity, and for great personalities it is necessary to show mercy to the foolish. That's a difficult position to be in sometimes, dealing with foolish people, because foolish people are foolish. They're going to do foolish things and speak foolish things and act in foolish ways. But Prahlad is saying, great personalities, it's a necessity. You can't just let them going on being foolish. And there's lots of foolish people. It's mostly foolish people. But so great personalities have to do something. Here's Prabhupada. I'm just going to read this paragraph and we'll let you go. Hear the words, Priya Janam Anusevatam Naha, taken directly from the verse, indicate that the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very favorable to devotees who act according to the instructions of his own pure devotee. So, the Lord is all-merciful, and he manifests the fullness of his mercy in those who take up the instructions of the Lord's pure devotee. He empowers such persons. They become the bearers of this mercy. The Lord is all-pervasive, but we can't figure it out. We can't perceive him. We can't detect him. Although, philosophically, he's everywhere. We're not tuned in. We're on the wrong channel. But those who are the recipients of the fullness of his mercy, that is, those who are his pure devotees who are taking the message very, very effectively, very deeply, and very sincerely, they're the bearers of the mercy. In other words, one must become the servant of the servant, of the servant of the Lord. If one wants to become a servant of the Lord directly, this is not as fruitful as engaging in the service of the Lord's servants. This is the direction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who shows us the way to become Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasanudas. Anyway, it's a very ecstatic paragraph. They're quote after Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Maybe we'll read this evening or something, but very, very ecstatic. When Prabhupada would speak on these verses from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, from the Bhagavatam, he was just bursting in ecstatic expression of impelling his followers to take the same thing that Prahlad is speaking about, to take the position of being servants of qualified souls and assist those qualified souls. And this way become bearers of the Lord's mercy, become empowered by the Lord's mercy, just make two little examples. When during the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wanted very much to fulfill the desire of his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a vision, as I mentioned yesterday. He had a vision of giving Krishna consciousness to the whole world. Or, like the question last night of Lord Chaitanya, giving people the opportunity to hear the teachings and the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. So he published a little booklet, The Life and Precepts of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and sent it to universities all over the world. So Bhaktisiddhanta, he also wanted, following this expansive vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sent two of his leading sannyasis. It was a big ceremony, too. Funds were gathered from the different temples, and in a big ceremonious way, they were sent to England to preach the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Well, they came back empty-handed. They were there for close to a year. You know, it was a big hoopla, big, you know, thing for them to go. But they were unable to, although they were very, very learned, very renounced, very powerful sannyasis, nothing. They came back to India. Maybe 40 years later, Prabhupada sent three American couples, husband and wife, grihasthas, as preachers. Now, the quality, the point I want to make is, the quality, it's not that Bhaktisiddhanta was incapable of investing potency in renunciates to preach, but they were not bearing the potency, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana. One would think two stalwart, learned, powerful, renounced sannyasis and a few very these devotees that had come from America were maybe had been practicing Krishna consciousness for a year or two, young, you know, in their 20s. But they went with Prabhupada's vision carried in their heart to establish Krishna consciousness in England. And within a few months, they had a temple. Within a few months after that, they had George Harrison singing Hare Krishna and making a number one best-selling recording, Hare Krishna mantra, all over Europe. And then shortly after, he donated the Bhaktivedanta Manor, and it was an explosion. What made that possible? And what made the other one not so possible? Taking the instruction in a very, like Prahlad, in a very humble way, with full faith in the empowerment that just through this instruction, it will happen. Just like Prabhupada said about himself, he went to the West and he just followed the instructions. If you ever have some funds, print books. I had no idea what would happen. And what has happened is beyond my imagination, beyond my expectation. But empowerment. One has to be empowered by the cyclic succession, by Guru and Krishna. If that empowerment is not there, there's no material formula that's going to work. Prahlad was just a 6-year-old boy. Persons who for 20-something years of their life had never even heard Krishna, after associating with Prabhupada, they were absorbed in hearing and chanting Krishna's name and carrying forth this mission. Prabhupada was so empowered to give this shakti to other people, his quite immature followers.
but he invested that potency in them. It's that potency that enabled them to spread Krishna consciousness. I'm pushing it, but I want to tell one other little anecdote to this. Once there was one member of Gaudiya Math who met one of Prabhupada's disciples and said, "Oh, Swamiji, he's been very successful in the West because before he started, he was a very good businessman. So because he was very good in business, he knew how to, you know, spread Krishna consciousness." And the devotee, disciple of Prabhupada, turned and actually it was a sannyasi, let him have it. He said, "Do you not know that in Chaitanya Charitamrita Krishna says, or Mahaprabhu says, without the direct empowerment, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana, without being directly empowered, you cannot even induce another person to speak the holy name, or to speak of spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. There's no material formula that can make this successful, but the direct empowerment." So these statements that Prabhupada is making here in these verses and purports, it's empowerment, it's statements. Chaitanya, he's repeating Mahaprabhu's statements. Go forward. Whoever you meet, speak something about Krishna. That was Prabhupada's hallmark. When he first went to America, whoever he met, he would have some light conversation, but very quickly, conversation got to Krishna. It's not necessarily that every single person who he spoke something about Krishna to became a Krishna Bhakta, but he was following the instruction. He was carrying the instruction in his heart and manifesting the instruction through his speech from the heart. Somehow, he made that his way of life. And by that submission to the empowering instruction, look at the result. So these are, I'll end here. These are very, very wonderful teachings. Very inspirational teachings of how to be concerned not just for our own salvation or, say, our protection from the onslaught of material existence, but that and much more, bringing to the manifest stage the spiritual world here in this material world, making the Lord manifest, the mercy of the Lord manifest through the agency of his merciful representatives. So, we'll to be continued because of the time. Hare Krishna, thank you for being patient. Those of you that have to go to class, comments or questions from anyone? Yes.
How could Prabhupada have such strong faith in the Prabhupada administration?
How is it that he could have such strong faith? Meaning, how can we come to the stage of having such strong faith? Well, there's two sides to that. Obviously, by the example of Prabhupada's life, he was an exceptional living entity. And we're not. the opposite, quite ordinary living entities. And so, to expect that we will manifest Krishna consciousness in the same degree as Prabhupada did or as Prahlad did, that's a little preposterous. But on the other hand, Prabhupada wanted that. He wanted, but he explained that just like the father always likes to see the son surpass what he did. The father's wanting that. And when an exalted soul desires something, there's no limit to Krishna's empowering that something to happen. So that's the other side. Our lack of qualification, of lack of being anything special, in part requires, initially, recognition of that fact. We're nothing special. In that same position of humility as Prahlad. So maintaining a very humble position, and on the other side, recognizing the supreme position, just like he's indicating of Lord Nrisimhadeva. And those souls who the Supreme Lord have become very dear to the Supreme Lord, recognizing their exalted position. And although I like Prahlad or like Prabhupada, have no right, no claim, no access to that position, still I know that those persons are very, very merciful. And so, what Prabhupada said himself was that he always felt himself to be with his spiritual master, connected to his spiritual master. He had deep acceptance of him and deep love for him and deep faith in him. Exceptionally deep. And that carried him. And even when tested, when that faith was tested, the faith didn't waver. Seeing that, then Krishna chose to decorate Prabhupada with some very, very super empowerment. So that may not happen with us. Super empowerment may not happen. But something, according to Krishna's will happen if we take a faithful position, maintaining at all times a very realistic picture of our meager existence. And then, however Krishna wants to empower, Krishna can empower. That's his department. Serving is our department, and bringing outcomes of that service, that's Krishna's department. Prabhupada, if you just respond to your question one more time, Prabhupada had absolute faith and absolute submission and absolute manifesting of carrying out those instructions, regardless of duality. What happened in Jhansi, Prabhupada could have given up. Oh, it's not going to work. I tried. Didn't give up. Prabhupada once commented that had any of you tried speaking to the devotees, had any of you tried to do what I was assigned to do by Bhaktisiddhanta, you would not have been able to complete it. It's too difficult. Too much obstacle. Too much discouragement. No financial support. No assistance. Nothing. On his own completely. Just all he had was his instruction. Do it. Severe cold in the winter and having his typewriter stolen. Living with crazy people. Dirty, crazy people. Couldn't do it. He did it. So, anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.